Good morning. This morning's gospel is the second of three stories that make up chapter 25 of Matthew. Now that's the end of the whole public ministry narrative and the end specifically of the fifth sermon. Remember the five great sermons of Matthew that we've been reading one by one during the year? Coming to the end of the last one. After the third part of this, chapter 25 ends, 26 begins, "When Jesus finished all these words, he said to his disciples, 'You know that in 2 days it will be Passover, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified,'" and so on. Passion narrative begins in 26, 27. The resurrection narrative in 28. So this is the end of the section and the end of the whole public ministry in three stories, which we read out of order. The first one was read last week, the story about the 10 bridesmaids. This may be a long time proposition. Be prepared. Bring the flask of oil along with your lamps. And the third one we read 2 weeks ago. We skipped it out of order, read it on All Saints' Day, because it seemed to be a fitting gospel for that day in particular. And that's the one about whatever you do to the least of my sisters and brothers, that you do to me. That's the last story that Jesus tells in Matthew before the passion narrative begins. That's the emphasis at the very end. This story sits between the two. The three together provide a program, spelling out, perhaps in some more detail, the original injunctions that were given to us back at the very beginning of the gospel. First chapter of the first sermon, Matthew 5, ends with Jesus saying, "Therefore, be perfect, as your Father in heaven is perfect." Not a long list of commands, not a list of virtues, not a list of pious practices, but simply, be perfect as your Father is perfect. Well, that's nice, but what does that mean? Who is my Father, and in what way is my Father perfect? For 20 chapters now, Jesus has been telling us and showing us. Throughout the five sermons and all the narrative material in between, in word and in deed, Jesus has been presenting to us who the Father is, who he is, who we can be. And we're told, grow up to be like that. Be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. And now, at the very end, we get these three summary stories. One that says, be prepared. Be patient. It may take a lot longer than you expected. Bring the flask of oil along with your lamp. And this one that says, but that first one doesn't mean just come wait for it. Come watch for it. Bring your flask of oil, keep your lamp burning, and sit around and wait to see what God is going to do. There's a lot more to it than that. We are called to active participation in the work of building God's kingdom. Active. Entrepreneurial. Risk-taking, if you will, participation. I mean, look at the two guys who are commended. They each doubled their money during their master's business trip. Now, business trips took a little longer in those days. You know, travel was a lot slower. It might have taken, I don't know, what, 12, 15, 18, 24 months? But even if it took 2 years, double your money in 2 years, that's a 36% interest rate. You don't get that on a CD. You spend a lot of time working this money and probably taking some chances with it. This is interesting, by the way, that this is one of the best examples anywhere in the world of the way that usage redefines words. Originally, talent was a unit of weight. And because they cast money to that weight or cast precious metal to that weight. You had a talent of gold, a talent of silver, a talent of bronze, each of which had the same weight, but of course would have very different value. But it's been used in this story ever since the 1500s, when the King James and the Douay-Rheims translations were made, in this context. And for 400, almost 500 years, preachers have been saying, use the talents that God gave you. And so the word has been completely redefined. It now no longer means a unit of weight or a unit of money. It's a gift or an ability that God has given you. If I say I have a talent, you don't ask me, you know, how I'm carrying it. You ask me what I have a talent for. I can say I have no talent for music. I enjoy music. I would gladly pay my talent to go listen to music and have done so in the past, but I have no talent for it. I can't do it well. But the word's been redefined by its use. But the use is right. The metaphor is correct. I think it's exactly what Jesus was saying. Use what you have been given. Utilize. Don't criticize, as they say in the 12-step programs. All right, you may have been given modest abilities, modest talents, so you only got two. The guy who got two got exactly, word for word, the same praise as the guy who got five, because he did exactly the same thing. He worked hard with it, and he doubled it. It's word for word. Well done, my good and faithful servant. Since you were faithful in small matters, I will give you great responsibilities. Come, share your master's joy. Word for word, not just in the English, but also in the Greek. Word for word. Same address. So it doesn't matter. If you have great talents, many talents, work pretty hard because a lot's going to be expected of you. If your talents are more modest, work pretty hard too, because if you reach the same level, you will get the same reward. Those of us who are of modest talents are not off the hook. People who have risen to be bishops and archbishops and cardinals and advisors to popes and whatnot may have 10 talents, and they will be asked if they made 10 more. Those of us who have been in one parish for 35 years and are considered below the radar screen for promotion obviously only have a talent and a half. You know, but if we use that talent and a half, we will be given the same reward. All of us called upon to do that. Take what God gave you, work hard with it, even take chances with it. And to what purpose? What is it that we're doing exactly? That's where that third story comes in. Whatever you do to the least of my brothers and sisters, that you do to me. Those three stories are together quite deliberately. The first and the third are uniquely Matthean. They don't show up anywhere else except in Matthew's gospel. So he's got these free-floating stories in his tradition. He can put them anywhere he wants them. He puts them here. The story from today has a related story in Luke. Scholars debate immensely whether it comes from a written source that's the same, because it's so much the same that it's got to have similar roots, the same roots. And yet it's so different. You wonder whether just editorial changes alone could account for the differences between the two. Either way, there's some commonality, some originality to it. Where Luke puts it is in the middle of the public ministry. Matthew puts it here at the end, coupled with these other two that are uniquely his own. He's crafting very carefully his final statement. This is his summation for Jesus' case. When they teach you in law school, you know, you open with your strongest witness and you end with your second strongest. And in your closing argument, you make the big point at the end. This is Matthew's chance to make the big point before he gets into the passion, death, and resurrection narrative. This is the end of 20-some chapters of the public ministry. And he starts off with, "Be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect." And this is what he ends with. Be patient, be prepared, bring your extra flask of oil. Be diligent, work hard, take chances, double whatever you were given. And do it all not for yourself, not for your church, not for your country, not for the sheer joy of doing it. Do it all for the least of my brothers and sisters. Direct your attention to the poor, to the hungry, to the thirsty, to the homeless, to the sick, to the imprisoned. Those three things. Be prepared, work hard for the least of God's people. This is the functional definition of be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. And with that, Matthew brings his grand architecture to a completion. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.